There's nothing new under the sun, so goes an old saying. I suppose that in music we'd like to think that composers' ingenuity and artistry certainly bring a sense of newness to everything they do, or at least the appearance of novelty. Otherwise, we imagine we'd hear every new piece of music as something already done before. Been there, heard that. But the truth is actually somewhat more prosaic. Not only do composers recycle and reutilize material, but we, as listeners, apparently seem to like it. It's hard to step very far within most music anywhere in the world and not hear fragments or phrases that seem oh so familiar, because we've actually heard them before. I'm Vlad Smirshkevich, and you're invited to come along with me on a short excursion through art music history to find out how and when composers decided to beg, borrow, and steal music from just about anyone, and why we all seem to like it so. Listening to music recently by composer Bryce Dessner, who I would have previously known for his musicking as part of the indie rock group The National. The piece was Haven, beautifully played by Katia and Marielle Labeck, Bryce Dessner, and David Shalman. However, I thought to myself over and over that I'd heard some aspect or section of this before, though not exactly the same thing, but very similar. And nearly two-thirds of the way through, it hit me that there was a gentle echo in this work of the music of another American composer, Steve Reich. Reich's work for electric guitars, Electric Counterpoint, written for and premiered by the iconic Pat Metheny, seemed to infuse many corners of this work with a similar energy. And it certainly seemed, if nothing else, a stylistic tip of the hat to the minimalist master. And of course, the connection made sense. Some of the key influences on Dessner's composition style included the minimalist composers such as Reich and Philip Glass, who he studied and admired. Bela Bartok's rhythmic complexity was another source of inspiration for Dessner, and in the exploration of rhythm, repetition, and phrase evolution in his compositions, these influences would no doubt come to the fore. Plus, Dessner had studied classical guitar and composition, having had an early exposure to both classical and contemporary popular music. Although many of Dessner's other works are less openly imitative of another composer's style or pieces, this work feels more of a salute to an important influence in Dessner's compositional life than it did full-blown mimicry. But all of this got me thinking back to ages past, of how pieces of music were made by borrowing and taking from earlier sources, and yes, this was all okay. It was even encouraged. Let's take a whirlwind tour of several musical ages to explore how. A fragment from Viderunt Omnes, a gradual attributed to the medieval composer Perrotin, sung there by Theatre of Voices under Paul Hillier. This particular work of organum, a form of polyphonic music created by layering new melodic lines over a piece of chant, was a mainstay of the High Middle Ages, flourishing around the end of the 12th century and the beginning of the 13th. Organum was built upon self-referential units and always recycled a piece of chant at its base. In fact, the chant was fairly well disguised in most cases, slowly drifting along note by note as the foundation under the other, more active lines above. The phraselets in the upper lines existed in isorhythm, or repeating rhythmic patterns, and these patterns and little melodies often borrowed from other chants and secular songs, making the self-reference come full circle. If there's any whisper of minimalist music in these repeating patterns, it shouldn't be too surprising. Modern-day minimalist composers were inspired by isorhythm, and minimalism would borrow from this technique in many of its works. Here's Looking at You, Steve Reich, Terry Riley, and Philip Glass. Chant lines weren't the only thing that were copied or borrowed to be later transformed for later works. Folk melodies were increasingly popular as the medieval period went into the Renaissance, and composers such as Josquin des Prez often borrowed from secular tunes and used them in sacred contexts. This was the basis for cantus firmus technique, where a pre-existing melody anchors a new composition. In an example of borrowing twice over, we can hear Josquin taking a folk melody, in this case, Mille Regrets, and transforming it into a chanson. The Josquin chanson, in turn, inspired masses and other works. In this example, we can hear the members of Hesperian 21 performing first Josquin's vocal arrangement of the chanson, then the instrumental version of it, and finally, a moment from the Agnus Dei of Cristóbal de Morales' Mass upon Mille Regrets. Into the late Renaissance and Baroque, familiar masters such as Claudio Monteverdi were also known for their tendency to dip into the music of others as well as their own. Monteverdi's early madrigals, such as those in the first book of madrigals of 1587, show clear influences of the polyphonic traditions of composers such as Palestrina and Marenzio. Like composers before him, Monteverdi also adapted well-known popular melodies of the time. For instance, certain dances and ritornelli in Orfeo from 1607 were based on folk or courtly dances familiar to Monteverdi's audiences. He also borrowed heavily from himself. On the sacred side, his Vespers of 1610 contains stylistic reworkings of his secular madrigals, such as Dixit Dominus and Laetatus Sum, which borrow techniques and even thematic material from his earlier secular works. Monteverdi also reworked some of his madrigals for dramatic contexts. Parts of his madrigals from the fourth book of 1603 were transformed into arias or recitatives in his operas, and arias in his operatic grand oeuvre L'Incoronazione di Poppea, 1643, are thematically linked to his madrigal Zeffiro Torna from the Madrigali Guerrieri et Amorosi in Book 8. The best part of it all is that Zeffiro Torna itself takes its baseline from the ubiquitous and pre-existing Chaconne, another perfect example of transformation by borrowing within borrowing. ¶¶ Monteverdi's Zefira Torna, performed by Il Complesso Barocco under Alan Curtis. Baroque composers were fabulous at borrowing from themselves and from others. Johann Sebastian Bach was a master of borrowing and frequently reused his own material, adapting and transforming it. His Mass in B minor repurposes several previous compositions, from his cantatas, for example. Its Kyrie and Gloria movements are largely derived from Gloria in Excelsis Deo, BWV 191, and the Crucifixus section from the Mass is adapted from the opening chorus of Weinen, Klagen, Sorgen, Zagen, Cantata 12. On the instrumental side, the Sinfonia in F major, BWV 174, is a reworking of the first movement of the Brandenburg Concerto No. 3, with additional orchestration and revisions for use in the cantata Ich liebe den Höchsten von ganzem Gemüte, PWV 174. A wonderful Baroque chain of borrowing and imitation occurs between Bach and Vivaldi. Bach was deeply inspired by the concerto style of Italian composers such as Antonio Vivaldi, and Bach's Concerto for Four Harpsichords, BWV 1065, is essentially an arrangement of Vivaldi's Concerto for Four Violins in B minor, Vivaldi's Opus 3, No. 10, from his L'Estro Armonico. Bach transcribed and reimagined Vivaldi's Violin Concerto for Harpsichords, demonstrating beautifully his ability to adapt and transform others' works into his own distinctive style. From the Concerto for Four Harpsichords, Strings and Continuo, that was the third movement, Allegro, performed by Kenneth Gilbert, Trevor Pinnock, Lars Ulrich Mortensen, and Nicholas Kramer, together with the English Concert. Vivaldi inspired many others to borrow from him, but he himself was the king of reuse and recycle. He was also moved to imitate the works of others, such as Arcangelo Corelli, but he was best at borrowing from himself, it seemed. He took wholesale from his own Opus 8, Il Cimento dell'Armonia e dell'Invenzione, with portions of it appearing and reappearing elsewhere in his works, showing how he experimented with the same dramatic gestures in different contexts. His famous Four Seasons took from earlier compositions, arguing that his borrowing was a way to refine his own ideas, something quite familiar to most composers. However, Vivaldi often repurposed material from his operas in his sacred music compositions and vice versa. The aria Sovente il Sole from his opera Andromeda Liberata shares musical themes with none other than his Stabat Mater, RV 621, reimagined to fit the sacred context. From Vivaldi's Stabat Mater in F minor, that was the opening movement sung by Andreas Scholl and Chiara Banchini together with Ensemble 415. Vivaldi himself was the subject of much musical larceny, and in fact, he probably would have loved it. The Red Priest's works, however, were also the subject of musical thievery of the best and most benevolent type. A perfect example is how one of his most iconic works, for which he himself recycled numerous sections from his other works, was redone by the 18th century French composer Nicolas de Chédiville. Chédiville, an oboist and musette player, and student of the great Auteuil, had by the age of 25 acquired enough clout and a good name to publish his own compositions. However, Chédiville made a secret arrangement in 1737 with printer Jean-Noël Marchand for Marchand to have the privilege to engrave, print, and sell one of his works as Vivaldi's Il Pastor Fido, Opus 13. Years later, in a notarial act dated 17th September 1749, Marchand would state that Chédiville was actually the work's composer, admitting that Chédiville had provided the money for the publication and was receiving the royalties. Why did Chédiville choose to have his own work attributed to Vivaldi? Possibly the good name of the Italian composer had its own cachet, but there is no doubt that the flattery of imitation also extended to being willing to give up one's own name for the sake of an admired composer. Talk about influence. I'll leave you with this work by Chédiville, which takes directly from Vivaldi's Four Seasons, transforming them into a very pastorally flavored work for musette or hurdy-gurdy, and adding two additional seasons, St. Martin's Day and The Harvest. Toby Miller takes a turn at the Vielle à Roue, the Baroque hurdy-gurdy, for this beautiful rendition of a familiar work. Toby Miller playing hurdy-gurdy and directing the ensemble d'Anguy in the opening of Autumn, from Les Saisons Amusants by Nicolas de Chédiville, after Vivaldi. That brings us as far as the Baroque, but there is plenty more thievery in the classical, romantic, modern, and contemporary periods of music, where our most beloved composers take from others and from themselves. I'm Vlad Smyshkevich, and I hope that our paths will cross again soon for the second part of Beg, Borrow, or Steal, how composers have artfully taken from others and themselves to create great music.
You're listening to RTE Lyric Live.